Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And anytime I get to interview the basketball players, and what I try to do is when the off season's here, which is a very short off season, even the former players, I grab them now. So we've really hit with some really interesting big-time college players, big-time NBA players as well. But again, we only think of a few, especially at different times. But when I look at this guy's resume, it is phenomenal. And when I think of this guest, I think of UCLA basketball first. Well, he's, again, a Pac-10 all-conference player, also All-American, but let's continue with the list of specific things of his success. He was an NBA champion, but I think of him as a UCLA Bruin, so I want to welcome the program, Tracy Murray. Tracy, how are you? And Tracy, I was seeing that you're back with your alma mater, being involved with them in certain ways. Thanks again for calling.
Thanks for having me on. It's truly an honor. Thank you.
Oh, I love hearing that for sure. And I think a lot of times you guys want to get back talking about things, especially when you know, you do so many different things, but just to talk about you as a player and your career in so many ways. And what a successful career. Looking back when you were a child, did you think you were going to be that big of a star in basketball?
Well, you always dreamed of being reaching your goals or your dreams, or dream of doing something great and something that you really like, and that you like basketball. To me, I kind of worshipped the game as a kid, and I didn't want to do anything else. So to be able to go to the school that I dreamed of playing at, and to be able to play for as long as I did in the NBA, in which I dreamed of playing in as a youngster, It was truly a fairy tale. Of course, there are ups and downs and things that you don't expect. That's just life. But, you know, just to accomplish that goal and to play for such a long time was truly a blessing.
And I'm glad that you definitely look at that. A lot of professional athletes get a bad rap, and they learn through that process of given that God-given talent, Tracy, that, you know, it's time you want to pay it forward in so many ways. And we get a few rotten apples in sports that ruin it for all of you, especially that really see as that you are role models, that you want to make a difference in the community and all these things, and then a couple guys ruin it for everyone in some ways, and as a professional athlete.
Well, I think 90% of the guys in every sport, or entertainment for that matter, are good people. They give back, they pay it forward. They're doing things to uplift, help kids, help the educational system if they can. They put their heart and their desire into making this a better place. You're right, the 10% that seems to be focused on, it kind of ruins a lot of stuff for what so many other people that are doing very good, because the media chooses to focus on the negative
instead of the positive.
But,
yeah.
Right. But there are tons of guys that are out there doing phenomenal stuff, Make-A-Wish projects. They're doing, you know, I did that a few times, and I tell you, that Make-A-Wish Foundation is something truly special. You know, these are kids that are dying, and their last wish is to hang out with you. I mean, John Cena is excellent. Him and Hulk Hogan are guys that I admire, because they get the call a lot, and they go above and beyond the duty to make sure these kids have a phenomenal day, time, whatever time they spend with them. And, you know, it's truly an honor to be in that situation and to be with a kid that wants to be with you. His last wish is to be with you. And I tell you, when I did my Make-A-Wish, it was somebody else's Make-A-Wish, and they kind of skipped out on it. I'm not going to name the person because, you know, his karma's already been dealing with him. But our shoe company, Fila, at the time called two of us players to fill in, and it was me and Tyrone Corbin. They flew Tyrone Corbin up from Atlanta, and they flew me in from L.A., and we were going to New Jersey. This kid, you know, he wasn't doing well in his – so they gave him two players for the price of one, more or less. And we played with him. We played games. We took pictures. We signed autographs. We did whatever he wanted to do for that day. And I tell you, on the way out there, I didn't know what to expect. Right. You know, it's a thousand things going through my head. Once we got there and started doing it, and from the time that it was done to the time I got back on the plane, because it was a turnaround, I literally, probably for the first 30 minutes of the flight, tears were just streaming down my face because it was such a deep situation. And to think that the person skipped out on this kid and he was dying. It was really heartbreaking to think about it, but I felt so good to be a part of that, to have my number called, to step up and be there for a kid that's dying. It was an unbelievable experience. It was one that makes me feel happy to have been a pro basketball player, to be put in a position to where I could have done that.
We're talking to Tracy Murray, NBA champion, NBA star, plus also UCLA superstar. And Tracy, that's a great story, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, especially on the show, because that's one reason why I have the show, is for to talk about foundational work, talk about your career, but in more of an aspects of, you know, how you did this instead of what your accomplishments are. We all know what your accomplishments on the court were, but the hard work that you had to put in, so kids understand that, but also understanding things like doing great things like you did to help that child, to give them a great experience, is what life's about. And for, you know, kids listening right now, or high school players, Clay's going to college saying, I want to be like Tracy Murray. Well, the thing is that there's much more to that responsibility than that, and just the money, the fame, the accolades. It's about paying it forward, and you definitely I want to talk a little bit about that later on, but for sure. Now, let's kind of go into specifically UCLA. So you kind of said that was your dream. Were you the kind of player that was that every time, even when you started to play basketball, you were one of the best on the floor?
Well, I had a natural talent, but of course talent has to be developed. I wasn't blessed with the best athleticism. I had big feet. I was a heavy kid. So I had to work on a lot of stuff. I had the natural born ability to score the basketball or to shoot the basketball. Plus, I did put in my extra time as a youngster to make that ball go through the net as many times as it did. But, you know, and it helps that my dad played basketball. My family played basketball. I was around it all the time. I lived in the gym as a kid. I was pushed to the gym in a stroller. So it was, yeah, I mean, it just rubbed off on me real naturally. But to go to start off at the YMCAs and the Boys and Girls Clubs or pickup games at the local gym, and then to get the basic fundamentals at a Michael Cooper's fundamental, the King D basketball camp was all about fundamentals. It wasn't, Michael Cooper was there every day. This was during the showtime of the height of his career. In the summertime, he had a basketball camp in our hometown of Pasadena, California. And that's where we learned hard work. That's where we learned the fundamentals of basketball. You know, the Pasadena Bulldog basketball camp, which was the high school basketball camp ran by Coach Turgeon, him and Coach Dewey, those were the local coaches at the time that and, you know, they taught Michael Cooper. Michael Cooper passed it down to us. He paid it forward to us. So that enabled me to have fast forward in my career. I had 15 years of basketball camps to, you know, to teach kids the correct way of playing basketball. If you don't have the foundation, there's no way you can reach that pinnacle. So between the hard work as a youngster, learning the fundamentals, putting in the extra work because I wasn't given some gifts that it seems like tons of people have nowadays. Yes. It seems like everybody can run and jump and put their head on the rim. And, you know, but I had to work at that. So, you know, basketball in some sense was easy. And in the other sense, I really had to work at it, the athletic part of it. So I think the best thing that happened to me was to, I had surgery when I was 14 years old. I had a bone that was slipping out of the socket in my hip. And they said I had grown too fast. Plus, I had a weak core. So my hips were between growing from 5'10 to 6'4 in 3 months and having a weak core, my hips were doing haywire tricks, you know, and things were growing deformed. So missing that whole year, after 3 or 4 doctors telling me I'll never play again, and then one doctor telling me, you know what, we're going to fix you up and you're going to be fine. Dr. Stanford Noel, I'll never forget him. You know, he fixed me up. He put me back out there. And I was hungrier than ever. You know, sometimes when you're talented and you're one of the better players on the court when you're growing up, you lose your hunger. And then you have all of these child prodigies that don't go where they should go. It made me hungry. And, you know, just sitting there watching people play, watching people pass me up while I'm sitting for a whole year trying to get right. It was frustrating, but it was motivating. I spent a lot of time in the gym by myself when I was able, when I got cleared to start working out. I worked extremely hard to get back. Definitely. And the next 3 years of high school were dream years, and I was able to go to UCLA. I grew up watching UCLA on local Channel 5 station. And you know, I used to watch them a lot. So, you know, knowing the legacy of Coach Wooden and a lot of the players that have come through there, you know, of course, growing up in L.A., you wanted to go to UCLA.
Yes, yes. And that tradition always still continues at UCLA for sure in ways in that the program will always go into certain cycles, but it's just like Notre Dame football. We got to have a good basketball team, just like you have a great Notre Dame football team to keep the boosters happy for sure when you're talking about John Wooden and things like that. So, Tracy, were you highly recruited to go to UCLA?
Yes, I was. Arizona was the first one to send me a letter in eighth grade, but after that, it was, you know, UCLA. The more and more I kept playing from my sophomore year, I averaged 28 a game, 31 as a junior, 44 as a senior. So the recruitment, the recruiting process was I've been recruited by everybody. Being a McDonald's All-American helped.
Yes.
You know, I had my choice of where I wanted to go, and that's a blessing. You know, it's a blessing, you know, to be able to recover from that devastating injury and then to be able to be an All-American in 3 years after that and then go to the school of wherever you wanted to go, your choice. And it was a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and you know, a lot of praying, you know, just staying healthy. And as I say again, it's almost like a storybook. It was a blessing.
So you get there to UCLA. Who was the coach then? Remind me. I have to go back. I mean, you did well at UCLA going to the Elite Eight, but who was the coach when you were recruited to go to UCLA?
Well, Coach Herrick, Jim Herrick was my coach. What's so funny about that situation is I was being recruited by Walt Hazard, and then they let him go, and then Coach Herrick came in towards the end of my recruiting. And, you know, it's almost like the recruiting process had to start all over again with UCLA. I love the school. I love the atmosphere going to the games and everything. But when you have a new coach, you have to figure out, you know, what the plan is for you as an individual. And you know, who is he you know, adding to the team before you get there. You know, that's another thing that's going to attract you to come there. Who is he recruiting in your recruiting class that you're going to possibly be playing with? You know, so all of this, you know, had to make sense when the coaching change happened. And they went and they got Derek Martin and Don McLean, who were McDonald's All-Americans the year before, 1988, before me. And then they signed Mitchell Butler, who was a longtime AAU teammate of mine. He was a McDonald's All-American in my class, played 9 years in the NBA. When they signed him and Van Mason, who was a huge high school star in the L.A. area, and it just made sense to go there. It looked like they were starting to bring the glory days back. They were signing top talent, and it was like, okay, this is UNLV was attractive. You know, that they won the championship in 91, but I heard that they were going on probation, so that kind of took them out of the running. I was really attracted to Louisville because Coach Crum is a disciple of Coach Wooden, and he has a solid program. They won national championships. They were Purvis Ellison at the time. Allen Houston, who was my cousin, had signed there at the time. Coach Houston, who, you know, Allen's dad, he was there. But Coach Houston took the job at Tennessee, and Allen went with him. So
right. That
kind of eliminated Louisville. My other two that were in the top five was Villanova, which is if I wanted to go to the Big East. I really love Rolly Massimino. He was a great coach, a good motivator, a fun guy, great recruiter. The other one was New Mexico. At the time, you know, that was like the long shot. Okay, this is like a school that I feel that if they'll just go there and just let me do whatever I wanted to do. They had Luke Longley at the time. That was an attractive piece. You know, when you have a dominating center that can be double-teamed, that opens things up for me, of course. So that was attractive. But UCLA, the tradition, being at home, your hometown fans, your family, everybody gets to come to the game that, you know, that grew up watching you. That was more attractive than anything. And, of course, you know, UCLA is known for not only for their basketball, but for their academics. They're also known for, you know, I call it the triple threat, the social, the athletics, and the academics. You know, everything was right there. And so it was the best school for me to go to.
Well, you talk about L.A., and it's interesting you never played for the Lakers because, again, you definitely had that L.A. experience playing at UCLA. And so you had a great career at UCLA, to say the least, for sure. And am I right when I was looking at things, you came out early, right? You didn't finish?
Yes, I came out a year early. It was a situation where I played on the 91 Pan-American team and got a bronze medal. And I guess the only reason why we lost, Jimmy Jackson got a stress fracture, and he was carrying us at the time, and he was playing so well. And I thought when we lost him, we pretty much lost the gold medal.
Right.
So that was I played well. I was one. I was coming off of a high playing that summer in Havana, Cuba, for representing my country. I came into the season and played extremely well, two seasons of averaging 21 a game. Led the nation in three-point field goals. I just felt like the dream team was coming in. My Olympic hopes were shattered. The team that went to the Elite Eight, we were loaded. We had 10 pros on the team, and I felt like that team right there was going to be the team that went the furthest. I didn't think we were going to get to the national championship with the team afterwards. No disrespect to those guys because they're great players, but I just thought that was our best team. That was our best shot. And they kept saying, into the lottery, mid-first round for me. So I was like, let me just go ahead and take the plunge and jump in the draft.
So you jump in the draft. Where did you get I understand you got traded right after getting drafted by one team. So, but what pick were you?
Yeah, I learned the business side real quick.
Yeah.
It was It was the most stressful thing I went through in my life, and I've been through a lot of stress just with the injuries and stuff like that. I don't want to ever go through another draft again, trust me. I ended up, they told me between 10 and 20, but the teams that were in the 9, 10, 11 areas that I worked out for, they were impressed, so I thought I was going in that area.
Right.
And to, especially number 11 in Houston, I really thought I was a shoo-in to be. I had my best workout, and I shot that ball every which way they wanted me to shoot it, left-handed, right-handed, showed them a little bit of athleticism that they didn't think I had, and, you know, showed them I could handle the ball a little bit. My workout was good. I was really surprised when they took Robert Horry. Now, fast forward, Robert Horry turned out to be one of the best clutch players in the history of the game. He's a winner, you know, and I understand it now, being older. You know, this guy was 6'10", he sacrifices, he's extremely long and athletic, he blocks shots, he rebounds, he hits big shots. He was always the guy that, he was a perfect role player to play with Hakeem Olajuwon and to play with Clyde Drexler. You know, well, me and Drexler came in at the same time. But that first championship, you know, you had Otis Thorpe, you had Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, it was a perfect player to fit in the three spot that was going to, you know, kind of do the glue stuff,
right,
the dirty work, and be the glue guy, be the unselfish guy. You didn't need another guy putting up shots. So I fell down to 18. I got drafted by a team that I didn't even work out for, which was San Antonio. And going over the rosters and before my interview, after taking a picture with Commissioner Stern, you know, I'm being walked to the seat with the roster in my hand, and I'm just envisioning myself playing with David Robinson and Sean Elliott and Avery Johnson, all these guys. And all of a sudden, they told me, don't get too comfortable with the hat. That, you know, there was a trade. I'm like, well, you know, why are you giving me the roster? This is what I'm thinking, you know. So I'm sitting there talking about a team that I'm not going to even be a part of. And it was kind of frustrating. And then to be shipped to Milwaukee and then to Portland after
okay,
that.
Okay, that's up for a second. Milwaukee. I'm sure, being an L.A. guy, I'm going to Milwaukee. That's one of our one of our radio stations. I had to bring that up. That's one of our stations we're on. It's in Milwaukee. That's got to be, oh, my gosh.
Well, I was also thinking, I'm going from a playoff team to a non-playoff team. But then I end up getting shipped back to a playoff team, which, you know, the Portland Trail Blazers, they were loaded. They were so loaded. They were just coming off of the finals with against the Bulls. So I'm coming to a team that just came out of the finals. So there was no way I was going to play in my first couple of years.
Right, and so that's got to frustrate you as in high school 40-point scorer to another a prolific scorer at UCLA, and thinking you're going to a team where you're going to get this opportunity. And this is, again, the politics of basketball, which we talked off air. You go to a team that you're a star, you might end up being one of the big stars. Think of what is his name? That just went to Cleveland. That got traded. That was a UCLA guy.
Kevin Love.
Yeah, Kevin Love. Just think if you were in that kind of position as Kevin Love was in. Now, if Love would have went to a team that was a really top team, he might not see the floor. Now he is a big time scorer. Bam, he's in Cleveland now. You know,
and plus he was thrown into the fire where he can make his mistakes and play through his mistakes and feel comfortable and confident on the floor. Now, when you're playing with a veteran team and you're barely playing and then they throw you in there and you make one mistake and they pull you out, it's not the same feeling. You don't get that feeling of being comfortable out on the floor. So you're not playing your game. You're playing constantly looking over your shoulder, and that's the way I felt the first 3 years of my career.
But at Portland, one of the things you led three-point percentage. So you were a great three-point shooter. So when you got your opportunity, you were doing well, but just not enough time.
Right. Well, at that time, you know, Clyde Drexler had gotten hurt, and then Jerome Kersey had gotten hurt. So freed up a little time that year to where I can be on the floor and not look over my shoulder as much. And I was able to shoot the ball pretty well that year.
So you jump from the Portland Trail Blazers, get traded to the Rockets, which is hilarious, but only for a short period of time, and you got to at least win an NBA championship. So I guess even though you were just a role player again in that situation, to have, I guess, to call yourself an NBA champion, not a lot of people get to do that. So at least you got that was a little icing on the cake before your travels next, where you probably had your best part of your NBA career. But going to Houston and going from Portland, which is another top West team, to Houston. Tell us about, you know, once you heard you were traded again, it seems like you're starting to get things going in Portland and then you're gone again.
Well, it's funny because the day of the trade, I'm walking out in my uniform, my Portland uniform in Dallas, and I always get to the arena like 3 hours early so I can get shots up and a workout. Try to stay as sharp as I can because it's tough to stay in shape when you're not playing. They have a thing where you have to condition before and after the game, before or after the game, for 20 minutes if you don't get 20 minutes on the floor. But being on machines is not the same. So you have to get out there on the floor and do some running, do some jumping, shoot your shots, make sure that you stay in some type of rhythm. So I get there early, and I'm about to start shooting, and then there's a guy that's working at Reunion Arena at the time. This is before Dallas moved into their big arena that they're in now. And he goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? I'm about to get some shots up." He goes, "You haven't heard? You've been traded." I'm like, "I've been traded." So I call Clyde, because the guy told me what the trade was. I called Clyde. Clyde's like, "Where you at, Joker? I'm on the plane. Wait, we're waiting on you." So I immediately run back, get undressed, take a cab to the airport, barely make the flight. And then the next thing you see is us walking through the tunnel, waving at the crowd. That infamous moment where you know, Clyde is the home guy being brought home, and the reunion of Five Slammer Jammer with him and Akeem Olajuwon. That was an exciting time to see those two guys. They were acting like two little kids, man. It was almost like their college days had started over again. You see them laughing and giggling and stuff. And it was quite a time. I really enjoyed that team the half a year I was with them. It was a great bunch of guys. The chemistry was right. Everybody on that team was unselfish, and to not get re-signed. I mean, the way the situation went down with Houston, I was left puzzled with the situation of what's going on, what really happened, because I was told that they protected me during the expansion draft. So that means hands off for Tracy Murray, while Vancouver and Toronto make their choices of who they want to put on their teams. So as soon as the expansion draft is over, now I'm told they're not going to re-sign me. So I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there like, what did I do to deserve this? You know, I could have at least gone to Toronto and been on their salary cap and played over there initially, you know, instead of being protected. And then it's almost like my career was almost killed.
Right.
Because I was an unproven player. We just come off of a high winning a championship. So why would you do that to one of your players or do that to somebody that's part of your championship team? You know, it's just, to me, it was just, it was baffling to me. So, you know, I was sitting at home during training camp the next year. Nobody was knocking on my door. And this is fresh off of a championship. I led the league in threes the year before, but I still wasn't proven as a player night in, night out. So I was thinking that I might have to go overseas. And, back then, if you go overseas, you don't come back.
That's that. And then we talked about that story off air with Dennis Hopson and his situation, and then also Marcus Liberty. Same type of deal. These are two awesome college basketball players that had the ability in the pros, but wrong team. And I think that's advice to tell young people. I want to ask that question right quick before we go into the more of your story, is telling these young people that go into the lottery or leave early that they better have a good situation before they go and do this, or when they're going to really look at hiring the right agent to get to the right team, especially because if you go to the wrong team, your career, you can make some money, but your career of ever accomplishing what you want to do might never happen.
Right. Now, that's where I think I made my mistake at. You know, I should have went with the agent that my college coach told me to go with, which I ended up going with him later on, which was Arne Tellem. I went with him later on after my first 3 years. But, you know, this situation, I was sitting at home. I was bugging my agent. He got to the point where he wouldn't call me back. And I kept inquiring about Toronto because Isaiah Thomas and I, we're pretty good friends. You know, we've had some brief conversations just about when I was in Portland, just about coming to Detroit because I wasn't being used in Portland. He's like, man, I know you can play. I've seen you play, you know. So we've had, you know, conversations, and I've always looked up to Isaiah Thomas. And so I told my agent, look, give me Isaiah Thomas' number because I want to know the truth about what's going on. At the time, I was really questioning my agent. I didn't trust him because he was telling me he's trying to get more money out of Toronto. It's like, to me, it wasn't about the money. It was about being on a team, getting in the training camp, and establishing myself as a pro. So I called Isaiah myself, and he was always really honest with me. He was like, T, I would love to give you more money, but we're operating on a half of salary cap. We can't give you no more than minimum. And I was like, okay, send the plane ticket. I'm coming. And so that's how I ended up staying in the league. Otherwise, Tracy Murray was done after 3 years, and you would never have heard of him again.
Wow.
And he told me, he said, look, we may not have money, but we have opportunity, we have shots, and we have minutes. You come in here and you take you a spot, you got all of that. So that's what I did.
Now, you would have gotten a lot more money in Europe then, right, if you would have jumped? Would you?
Yes.
See, that's something a lot of people don't know that are sports fans. They think, oh, he went to Europe just because he couldn't hack it in the NBA. And there's tons of those stories, as I talked about two people. I'm sure you have 1,000 to talk about. But you said, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to continue my NBA career. So you head to Toronto. You have your best year in 1995 in Toronto, where you average, I think, 16.8 points a game. Am I correct? I was looking at the wiki. I didn't write that down. Something like that.
16.2.
How much?
16.2. You're right there.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
so you have a great year, and then I'm sure people are kicking themselves throughout the NBA saying we missed this guy based on being on a veteran team. And then you're in.
Well, yeah. I mean, we missed this guy, or there was like one of the scouts in Houston said, he's like, why didn't you play that way with us? But it's a situation when you're coming off of a team, Portland, which didn't really play you. So you kind of lose the confidence in yourself. You allow yourself to get heavier than you're supposed to. I wasn't really professional. I was 19 years old when I signed my contract. So at 20 years old, I'm playing in the NBA. I don't know what being professional is. So, with that being said, you know, you fast forward and realize that, you know, your back's against the wall. There's no one knocking on your door. You're coming into the last couple of days of training camp before the season starts. I was in the best shape of my life, and I was playing my best basketball. So I came in ready to take somebody's spot. You know, I came in hungry. I've always had something that happened throughout my career that kept me hungry or motivated me. With the draft, for example, teams that passed over me, I was motivated to kill them whenever I played them, and I did.
Exactly.
You know, teams that traded me or didn't give me a chance, I came back and haunted them in my career. I came back and I played my best games against them.
Wow.
Portland, Houston, you know, Toronto was the only team that I left. I didn't come back and destroy because there was a good feeling there. I didn't want to leave Toronto. You know, at the end of that year, you know, I was a free agent again, and they were still stuck at where they were in the salary cap, and they couldn't pay me what I was worth. So am I going to roll the dice for one more year? You know, or am I going to take this deal that's on the table for 7 years with Washington? So I took the deal with Washington. So I sacrificed happiness and where I played my best basketball to secure my family.
Right. So you head to the Wizards, and you at one point, again, you scored 50 points in one game, which is another unbelievable honor that you're in the Wizards type of thing. But when you're with the Wizards, again, that program, I think they've never come back since the Bullets days. And
And we were the last Bullet team. I had signed with the Bullets, and then they had changed the name the next year. That first year with the Bullets, we went to the playoffs and had a pretty good competitive first round with the Chicago Bulls. And Mike, you know, talked about us being the team of the future. Like, these guys have a nice balance, a nice young, talented team, a team to watch out for the future. And then we changed our name to Wizards. There were some issues with, you know, off the court with some of our players, and then they end up trading our best player away, Chris Webber. You don't trade your best player away and expect to win basketball games. And that's what happened. And from that point, we all took a nosedive. The team took a nosedive. The organization took a nosedive. And me as an individual, I took a nosedive because I fed off of Chris Webber. I fed off of Rod Strickland. Now Rod Strickland's getting double and triple teamed. And we don't have – and Juwan Howard, he's a good post player, but he wasn't like Chris Webber. Chris Webber can get his 20 and 15, 25 and 15 and get you 6-7 assists. He knew how to make everybody around him better from the post. You know, Rod Strickland was able to be a better player with Chris Webber on the floor. Now you take that away, and driving lanes are clogged. No one's leaving you if you're a shooter like myself. My man stayed connected to me, didn't move. And no one was doubling Juwan Howard. And they were like, okay, we'll let him score. He's not going to go out and get 40 and 50.
Exactly.
We'll let him score. You know, we'll let him score 20 a game, and we'll win the game. So that's what happened, you know. And, you know, the frustration just kept mounting with me. And I was, like, totally out of character by the time my last days in Washington was there. I was really fed up with losing. I didn't like the direction where we were going. And I'm a role player that was feeling this way.
Right. So then you jumped to Europe to finish up your career, right?
No. I asked. This was by the time I say this was like my seventh or eighth year.
Oh wow!
So you know, I asked for a trade. Now, for a role player to ask for a trade, I mean, that's probably the biggest mistake I ever made in my career. I should have just stayed there, bit my bottom lip. Just kept doing what I was doing, you know. The frustration was mounting. I'm a winner, though. I want to win. I want to get to the playoffs. And, you know, I know that's where, you know, names are made. That's where, you know, the playoffs is where you get your, you know, your competitive juices flowing. That's where you become a star. So, you know, we're sitting at home watching the playoffs every year now, you know, and that was the most frustrating thing ever. So, I was traded to Denver, wasn't in Denver for about half a year, traded back to Toronto. Then I was there a year and a half, and I was on the Vince Carter team.
Right. Okay.
Where we went to the playoffs and to the Eastern Conference Finals against Allen Iverson and the 76ers, and, you know, the infamous graduation day of Vince Carter, where he went and graduated during Game 7. Yeah, I was there for all of that, so... You know, that was a good team. I really enjoyed being back in Toronto for a second go around, especially for, you know, the fans deserve to have a winner up right. there. They're very supportive. They're very loyal. And to be a part of their winning team now, you know, we gave them thrills the first year being on the being an original Raptor on the inaugural team. We beat some good teams, the 72-10 Bulls team. We, you know, we beat some teams that took some good teams to the limit. But now we're winning. We're going to the Eastern Conference Finals. We have a couple of All-Stars on the team. You know, it's a different atmosphere now. So, I mean, that was a great time to be a Raptor. You know, just like today, they're winning. They have a really good team. Now, I'm really happy for the fans.
Wow. Okay.
So after during the playoffs, I kept losing power in my right leg. Whenever I drove to the basket, I was having constant back spasms that I was playing through and suiting up through. And I got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. I went and got checked out, and I needed to have an arthroscopic hip surgery because I had bone spurs and bone chips floating around in my hip, and it was hitting a nerve that was causing problems. So when I decided to do that and get an arthroscopic hip surgery, then that's when Toronto was like, hey, we got to get rid of this guy. So they sent me to the Lakers. I played the year with the Lakers. It was playing on that team and a great bunch of guys. We had so much fun off the court, but, you know, it was hard dealing with Kobe and that situation. And he didn't want to wait his turn, you know. And Shaq was clearly the man on the team. He was playing his best basketball at the time. But, you know, those two kept going at it. And you know, it ran its course, and we ended up losing to San Antonio.
Wow.
In the playoffs. And then the next year, they brought in Mel Mann and Gary Payton and Brian Russell, you know, to try to get back. But, you know, I think that situation, you know, that team it ran its course because it was too much drama on the team.
Right.
You know, with those two. Shaq. I went to both of them before the season because me and Kobe had the same agent. Me and Shaq were like brothers. And, you know, they both agreed to let it go. But, you know, when you have history, it's not going to be let go. You know, it's just something that's built up for such a long time that it's going to explode. And, you know, it just wasn't right. I really enjoyed my time with them, though, especially off the court, like on the buses, in the locker room, on the airplane. It was a fun bunch of guys, a very unselfish team, just a cast of characters that I really enjoyed being around. I really had a good time.
Well, Tracy, I tell you, you've been a role player in a lot of places, but you've run into played for some unbelievable stars in different generations almost. So how many years did you play in the NBA, by the way?
I played 12 years in the NBA. I played one more full year after that year with Portland, and I was the last Predator to the Knicks in 2004, and then that's when I went to Europe and played 2 years in Greece and 1 year in France.
How did you stay playing so much as a role player? Is it your heart? It sounds like when we go back to the beginning, you were always hungry. You were the kind of player that would practice hard in the practices to keep playing, would really challenge the starters in practice.
Yes.
That they said that this is a perfect person to pretend he's so-and-so or he's this person. Was that hard, Tracy? I mean, I know you talk to people going out and doing talks all over the place and different things like that. Is that hard, especially you were such a star in UCLA, that you never got that huge star again in the NBA? You always were a leader to help. I mean, you were always that role player that helped all the superstars stay hungry for the games, and you had to take that role. You were a star at times, but at the times when you were with the best teams, you were just the person that drove them every day to say, okay, I got to stop this guy in practice so I'm ready for the game.
Right. I think the harsh reality of it was, you know, when I realized, I say probably around 25 or 26 years old, that, you know, you're told so many times, if you're the first one there, the last one to leave, you work hard, you improve, you're going to move up. There is a glass ceiling that you cannot go past. And I think you go through a period of frustration, realizing that you only can go so far because they're only going to pay people that they feel that they can market. And those that they feel that they can market are going to be the stars. So, you know, that political part, I had to come to grips with it. I had to get my family to come to grips with it. And once that argument was smashed out, then comes, okay, I'm going to maximize my window, do the best I can with that. And that's where the 40-point game comes from in Toronto, and that's where the 50-point game comes from in Washington. It's like you got to take advantage of the windows that you're given, you know, to let people know that, hey, I can play. It's just that I have to sit in this role that I'm given. There's a lot of great players in the NBA. There were a lot of great players that got cut in training camp that no one even knew about, that like destroyed some of us during training camps, but we were all lucky that we had guaranteed contracts.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there were guys that come through, and I was like, man, who is this kid? Who is that guy? You know, that's how Ben Wallace got discovered. Ben Wallace came into a Washington training camp my first year, and we're like, who is this 6'7" dude that's playing like he's 7 feet? He's got extremely long arms. He's blocking shots. He's dunking on everybody. But he's only my size, extremely strong, and didn't say much, just went out there and did his work. I mean, he blocked so many shots of our franchise players that Wes Unseld, who was the general manager at the time, was like, hey, we're bringing this kid in. He was just playing pickup games with us. We're bringing this kid to training camp.
Wow, Tracy.
He came in the training camp.
Yeah.
Did his thing, and that's how Ben Wallace got started.
We're talking to Tracy Murray, NBA champion, NBA 12-year veteran, and also NCAA star at UCLA. And Tracy, you definitely have a story to tell. I could take a segment every one of these of the story of who you've crossed paths with, where you were a superstar on a terrible team to being a role player on a great team. And so you got the opportunity, you got that NBA ring, and I think that you were definitely that veteran in the locker room with those young players at times, telling them, you know, doing that. So that's where I think it led to you after playing in Europe to coach, because you got the opportunity in certain ways of brushing with greatness, understanding, and being, you were a coach on the floor. So you said, hey, I'm going to, and look at thinking of your process and, you know, how you really looked at UCLA and Wooden, why you came there. Every time you wanted to be that player who learned from the best and then take that. And that's where, I guess, today you are in so many ways, from coaching to broadcasting to also going out and talking with people, that you want to share these stories and
yes,
share your wisdom.
Of course. I mean, if you can't help anybody, I mean, when there were many a times where I was sitting on the bench, then I would go home and I would have a conversation with God. What am I here for? You put me on this pedestal and on this platform for what? What do you want me to do with this? And, you know, after a while, I mean, you know, you start listening, you start feeling different things, and it's like it was more than just playing. It was to pay it forward. It was to help people behind you. It was to go out and talk to people and encourage people, try to make it a better world. You know, we're all on this platform not just to play, but we have a huge responsibility to our communities, to the kids that come behind us, to those who paved the way for us. You pay them respect, and then you do what they've done to you, and you pay it forward to other people and help them. And so with that being said, it led to 3 years of coaching in the NBA Developmental League, and being a mentor in that league. It also led to being a year assistant coach with the Tulsa Shock in the WNBA. And now I'm helping my brother. My brother owns his own, he has his own training, Prodigy Athletic, where he trains kids. And the training has grown so much to where he was like, okay, now what I want to do with this training is I want to help these kids get exposed to colleges so they can go live the dream like we did. So now he formed a bunch of AAU teams just with the kids that he trains, help them get exposure. And now we've had about 8 or 9 D1 guys now. Wow. And tons of kids have gone to NAIAs, D2s, or D3 schools as well. I mean, we're helping kids get into college and get their education paid for. And that's the bottom line of what we tell these kids. If you just do what we say, come in and work hard, learn what my brother is teaching, we can help you get to a college. You guys just have to do the work, and you have to be motivated and come in and put in your time. And the reward is seeing them go off to college for us. That's the reward. You know, it makes us feel like proud papas to see these kids go into college and play basketball and get an education. You know, they're experience a once-in-a-lifetime situation when they're going to college and playing basketball for a school.
Tremendous, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it does your heart good, you know. And my brother, you know, Cameron Murray, he played, he was an All-American in high school. He was a second all-time leading scorer behind me when I finished. I was the number one all-time leading scorer in California. My brother was number two for a long time. He went to USC, signed at USC when George Raveling was there, but George Raveling had that car accident. And my brother never got to play for George Raveling. So he was stuck at USC for 2 years. They wouldn't let him out. So he was stuck at USC for 2 years. And then he ended up going to play for Denny Crum at Louisville. And he played at the end of Crum's tenure there. And he had a tryout with the Indiana Pacers. He had a tryout with the Toronto Raptors. And he also played in the Portsmouth pre-draft camp, and he was with the Rockford Lightning in the CBA and decided to do a year of the Globetrotters and call it quits. You know, and he's like, that's when he decided, I'm just going to take what I know and help kids. And everything we do as a family. So my dad, my mom, we're all aboard helping him out. It was the same way during the Tracy Murray basketball camps for 15 years. We all were a part of it. We all helped out. So now we're helping my brother out with this.
That's tremendous. So, wow. And Tracy, are you broadcasting as well right now?
Yes. I broadcast for UCLA. This is like my sixth year now. I started off with the women in some games, and I was doing fill-in work for the Bruins when Don McLean was shifting over to TV. And I just kept getting better and getting better. And then I knew eventually that Don wanted to do all TV. So McLean started doing all TVs with the Pac-12 Network, and he's doing in-studio stuff as well as games. And that freed up the spot to do color for the Bruins on the radio. So I've been doing that for approximately 6 years now.
That's tremendous, and another opportunity so you could do that while also getting to help your family business with your brother and getting kids to college and playing college ball. So tremendous things, Tracy. Great story. I tell you, you are definitely, I could talk to you for hours about specific things and stories and different things. Definitely want to reach out to you. I know during the season you might be busy at times, but I'll try to get you on to talk some NCAA college hoops with me and stuff like that, especially for our network. And but where's the best place we can find you, Trace, me, and learn more about you?
Well, you can get me on at Real Tracy Murray on Twitter. I'm on Instagram at I think it's TMurray30 on Instagram. Facebook, I have a Facebook page as well. My website, TracyLMurray.com. But you can catch me at the Bruin games. Don't hesitate to tap me on the shoulder and say hello. You'll catch me in the summertime. I'm the Ball Up Street Ball coach. We have a show on Fox Sports 1. It used to be on Fox Sports. This is my third or fourth year doing that. We tour the East Coast most of the time during the summertime. So come on out and see some of the best street ball players in the world. You got the Professor and AO and Air up there and Special Effects and Mr. Africa. A lot of these guys that were part of the N1 tour back when N1 was hot, they're still out there doing their thing. So, you know, we enjoy entertaining. So I'm always around doing something basketball, whether it's training kids, coaching, broadcasting, Ball Up Street Ball. You can catch me anywhere.
You're a busy guy for sure, Tracy. Thanks again for taking the time to come on the show. And we'll stay in touch, and I'll reach out to you and see how things are going. And if you have anything to promote, don't hesitate to contact me. So thanks again for calling, Tracy.
Thanks for having me on. I look forward to talking to you during the season.
All right. Take care, Tracy. See you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.